Hello, I'm Stephen Greenblatt. I teach in the English department, and I want to talk about a poem that I encountered a long time ago and that has had a special place for me ever since. I must have heard it first in the 1960s in graduate school. I say heard it because it was, I still have the distinct memory of it being read out by a teacher in a seminar. And its power immediately struck me, which doesn't by any means always happen, even with the poems I care about. It sometimes takes a much longer period of time for it to reach me. But this poem reached me at once. It's by a Tudor courtier and diplomat, Sir Thomas Wyatt, who lived at the time of Henry VIII. And the poem is called They Flee From Me. So I will first of all read it to you. It's in three stanzas, three rhyme royal stanzas. That is to say, they're seven-line stanzas that go A, B, A, B, B, C, C. It's a stanza stanza form that Chaucer loved and other medieval English poets. It became less fashionable as the 16th century wore on. But I think this one works splendidly. Here it goes. They flee from me. They flee from me that sometime did me seek, with naked foot stalking in my chamber. I have seen them gentle, tame, and meek, that now are wild, and do not remember that sometime they put themselves in danger to take bread at my hand, and now they range, busily seeking with a continual change. Thank be fortune, it hath been otherwise 20 times better, but once in special, in thin array after a pleasant guise, when her loose gown from her shoulders did fall, and she me caught in her arms long and small, therewithal sweetly did me kiss, and softly said, Dear heart, how like you this? It was no dream, I lay broad waking, but all is turned through my gentleness into a strange fashion of forsaking, and I have leave to go of her goodness, and she also to use newfangleness. But since that I so kindly am served, I fain would know what she hath deserved. Okay, the poem, if I ask myself why the poem seemed to reach me, of course, I can't tell you all of the reasons. They're not accessible any more than anything that you love is completely accessible that way. But it had something to do with the power and directness of the middle stanza, and something to do with the way in which that directness and power of a memory, the time in which it had been 20 times better, the once in special, the power of the once in special is set up by the first and the third stanzas. So it was focused for me on that intense memory of a single moment that somehow, a moment of pleasure, delicious pleasure, that the poet speaker has lost, that he recalls with a mingled bitterness and longing. And again, we have very few glimpses, lyric glimpses directly, as it were, in the bedroom of the early 16th century. So part of the strange excitement of the poem, it's by no means the first time it ever happened, and of course one can read ancient poems that have comparable glimpses of something intense in Catullus or in Propertius or others, but it's unusual for Tudor poets. Suddenly you strip away all of the veils and curtains and get to the experience itself as the poet is remembering it. Once in special, in thin array after a pleasant guise, that's to say in some costume or a dress in a beautiful fashion or after some occasion that was beautiful, when her loose gown from her shoulders did fall and she me caught in her arms long and small. So the intensity has to do with the moment in which the poet, who's extremely aggressive, as Wyatt was almost all his life as a poet toward women, in which he reveals in the midst of all of this flailing and aggression and hostility, which is very much part of this poem, this peculiar moment of pleasure when he himself is caught by those long, small arms. Therewithal sweetly did me kiss and softly said, dear heart, how like you this. Now, the poem begins with the declaration that he's been abandoned, and sketches this peculiar scene that has not so much to do with the particular moment, but at least with what the poet claims to be generalizable experience, an experience with many creatures. I say creatures because the they in the first stanza appear to be a kind of animal, something perhaps like deer. There's actually an extremely tedious scholarly debate about whether we should think of them as deer or as squirrels, but we won't go there. So they flee from me that sometime did me seek with naked foot stalking in my chamber. The naked foot is witty and playful because one doesn't normally think of deer or squirrels, for that matter, wearing shoes or stockings. But, of course, the animal is a way of playing off the particular creatures, the women that he is actually thinking about. And they're stalking in his chamber, which has the effect of walking softly, but also of hunting. Though the creatures in the first stanza are not hunting, but actually feeding, as the poet imagines it. I have seen them gentle, tame, and meek, that now are wild, and do not remember that sometime they put themselves in danger to take bread at my hand. So the situation that the poet is describing is one of those peculiar experiences that actually most of us have had, where someone, namely a human, who is dangerous and aggressive as a creature, holds himself extremely still with his hand outstretched with some food on it for the animal to approach timidly and carefully and ready to flee. These gentle, tame, and meek creatures approached, but they do not approach any longer. They don't remember that they put themselves in danger to take bread at his hand. Now they range, he says, picking up the image of the animal, busily seeking with a continual change. Wyatt was obsessed all his life with that threat of people escaping from the reliable and bound into the world of newfangledness and busily seeking. Something else to say about the way this poem works, and I'll continue with it in a minute, has to do with the peculiar way in which Wyatt is handling the rhythm of the poem that gives it its odd force. If you actually try to scan it, these lines don't come out as regular iambic pentameter lines, though that appears to be the pattern in which they're meant to fall. They're peculiar and compressed. And in fact, when an editor in the 16th century took this poem and put it into a famous text of his called the Miscellany, Tottel's Miscellany, in 1557, so about 25 or 30 years after the poem was written, when Tottel took it and edited it, he tried to get it to be more regular. And I'll show you what he did. He renamed the poem. He called it "The Lover Showeth How He is Forsaken of Such as He Sometime Enjoyed." But here's what he did with it. Let's just take the first two lines. They flee from me that sometime did me seek with naked foot stalking in my chamber. If you say it out to yourself, you can actually feel what is going on in the beats of the line. And here's what Tottle did with it to try to make it more regular. They flee from me that sometime did me seek, with naked foot stalking within my chamber. Stalking within my chamber, not with naked foot stalking in my chamber. The within is a very, very small difference, but it actually takes away the peculiar presence or intensity of Wyatt's, of the poet's voice, and substitutes something pleasant and more ordinary and orderly. And he does that continuously in the course of his rewriting, in effect, of very small, subtle rewriting of Wyatt's poem. At the end of the second stanza, where Wyatt wrote, at least Wyatt as we understand from the Egerton manuscript, which is the best version of the poem, "Therewithal sweetly did me kiss, and softly said, dear heart, how like you this?" Tottle writes, "And therewithal so sweetly did me kiss, and softly said, dear heart, how like you this?" I hope you can hear the difference between, though it's a subtle one, between "therewithal so sweetly did me kiss" and "therewithal so sweetly did me kiss." It's a very small difference, but it actually transforms the line. Okay, back to the poem. The first stanza creates this peculiar retrospective sense of isolation. This is a poet who was had once speaker who had once been approached and now no longer is approached. And then he says rather braggingly at the beginning of the second stanza, "Thanked be fortune, it hath been otherwise 20 times better." That's the kind of thing one says when one is making extravagant claims for how good it was. But actually, one of the things that works in the second stanza is that the 20 times is meaningless, as most of these claims that human beings make are meaningless when they ramp up numbers. The 30,000 times you did this, or the 100,000 times you said that. What matters is the once in special. And then what you get is that peculiar memory in which the person who's described himself in the first stanza as being extremely still and withholding his menace in order to lure the creatures he's interested in to take bread at his hand. Now he's in a different situation where he is caught in the long and small arms of the lover who has let her gown fall from her shoulders. And that feeling of being caught is the passivity in that moment, the pleasure of letting yourself go into the embrace of the beloved is intensified by the peculiar way in which, as one looks at the lines, they are simultaneously extremely, at least to my way of thinking, extremely erotic and infantile. Erotic because the scene as it's described, at least in the context of the whole poem, must be a scene of sexual intensity. And yet at the same time, because the scene that's described could easily apply to a mother nursing an infant. She let her gown fall from her shoulders. She catches him in her arms, long and small, and then she says, "Dear heart, how like you this?" And that peculiar experience of letting the aggression give way to infantile passivity, or eroticized infantile passivity, let's put it that way, polymorphous passivity, Freud might have called it, seems to me part of the peculiar allure of the poem as Wyatt imagines it. It's a dreamlike allure, a dreamlike experience that he's describing, precisely the dream in which the adult and the child collapse into one another, and the aggressor and the one who is caught collapse into one another, and who is inside and who is outside in the scene, who is stalking and who's not stalking, collapse into one another. And it's precisely because of the dreamlike quality that I think the third stanza begins, "It was no dream. It was no dream. I lay broad waking. I lay broad waking." This is a bedtime moment, an in-bed moment. "But all is turned through my gentleness. the poet says in the third stanza, through my gentleness, into a strange fashion of forsaking. The speaker recovers his, out of this peculiar experience of erotic memory, he recovers his tone of aggrieved aggression. He thinks that he's been, because he didn't take advantage of his power, he's in effect responsible for the strange fashion of forsaking. He's been abandoned when he could actually have, having lured someone into his power, he could have taken advantage of this moment. I have leave to go of her goodness, he says with great irony. I have leave to go of her goodness. He's been dismissed, and she also, to use newfangleness, he says, a word that recurs in Wyatt's poetry as the way to describe an outrageous fickleness, a fickleness which he, misogynist that he is, always identifies with the woman and never with a man. But since that I so kindly am served, and he would have to, to probably use the three syllables on kindly as he spells it that way, but it might not have been. Since that I so kindly am served, I fain would know what she hath deserved. I'd like to know what she's deserved since I'm treated this way, kindly, in this way, after this kind. This is the way in the woman's nature, but also the